I'll now invite the Women in Social and Economic Research. Guthrie, thank you very much for your submission, and thank you for coming along today to speak on behalf of WISA.
How would you like me to?
Well, we've got your submission. If you would like to speak to it, I'm sure we'll find it very helpful. Thank you.
Okay. It might help perhaps just to give you a little bit of my own background. The submission is dealing with a fairly small point in relation to the inquiry, I think.
Yes.
Which relates to workers' compensation entitlements for dependents. My background is that I've been involved in three West Australian government inquiries since 1991. One which took place in that year, 1991, again in 1999, and also in 2001. So I've been relatively, well, I am very familiar with the West Australian legislation in terms of workers' compensation. My own studies and research is around workers' compensation itself. I'm the author of the Butterworth's Guide to Workers' Compensation in Western Australia. That, in a sense, is a bit of a caveat because there are some areas in which in other states I'm not so familiar with, but and to some extent the submission has been done at short notice, so I apologise for any deficiencies, but the main thing I think was to highlight something which I think this inquiry is probably already aware of, and that is that there is a shortcoming in legislation relating to workers' compensation dealing with dependents, and that is that where a worker dies in the course of their employment, the general entitlement is for a dependent to be entitled to a certain benefit. Usually this is a lump sum payment, and in the case of any children of a partnership, the children will be entitled to forms of benefits as well. In most states this can be substantial sums of money. In Western Australia I think the current figure is in the order of $150,000, and $150,000, and in some states it's considerably more. The point here I think is that it can easily be observed that in relation to the Commonwealth legislation it stands out as one which specifically excludes a payment of any kind for a dependent who happens to be in a same-sex relationship. So as at the page 4 of my submission where I've set out the Commonwealth legislation under the current, what they call the Comcare Act, it seems quite clear that it excludes, or requires at least, that a dependent be a person of the opposite sex of the employee. And that, I think, stands out as one of the most specific excluding provisions of all of the jurisdictions. Some other jurisdictions, I think Commissioner Henderson's already indicated, I think, that in Western Australia it may be by reason of incidental legislation that our West Australian Act probably covers dependents who are in a same-sex relationship, although I must admit I'm not familiar with that specific provision. As it currently stands, there are a group of states, Western Australia included, which specify that the dependent must be either a spouse, and that person, a spouse would include a person living in a de facto relationship. And I guess the legal interpretation issue is whether de facto relationship includes a same-sex relationship. And most states don't actually specify whether that is the case. It may be done by incidental legislation. So coming back to my first point, the Commonwealth, I think, stands alone as the only jurisdiction which appears to specify particularly that it must be a member of the opposite sex, whereas other jurisdictions, particularly Tasmania, I think, which I think is a very good illustration, has gone to some lengths to make it clear that a same-sex relationship or same-sex partnership will give an entitlement in the appropriate circumstance, so that Section 67 of the Tasmanian Workers' Compensation legislation provides that spouse includes a person in a significant relationship, and the term significant relationship is defined under a particular piece of legislation in Tasmania known as the Relationships Act, which includes, of course, people in same-sex relationships. So at one extreme, I think, is the preferred option, which is the Tasmanian option, and at the other, I think, is the Commonwealth. I'm assuming that the legislation which relates to seafarers, which is also under the Commonwealth jurisdiction, will be similar to the Commonwealth CompCare legislation. So that there are other examples too where particular state jurisdictions have attempted to address the issue, and probably the best example is Victoria, where they've made it clear that there is a right of entitlement to a dependent which includes a domestic partner, and domestic partner includes a person irrespective of gender, and I think a fair reading of that would include obviously partners in a same-sex relationship. So there are at least two means by which states could improve their legislation for models. There is the Tasmanian legislation and the Victorian. And Western Australia, I think, is in somewhat ambiguous position, and one or two other states are as well, because it hasn't actually been made entirely clear. And there may have to be references to amending incidental legislation to actually work out, in fact, whether same-sex relationships have that entitlement. So it follows, I guess, my submission is that the Commonwealth is out of step, that there are at least two good models by which the legislation could be amended. I tried to address briefly the significance or financial significance to the Commonwealth or other jurisdictions of that. I think I should probably make the point also that the CompCare legislation is currently undergoing a transformation, in that the federal government has recently legislated to provide that employers who are in competition with Commonwealth authorities, or are capable or have been in competition with Commonwealth authorities, can seek a licence from the minister to transfer out of the state jurisdiction into the Commonwealth jurisdiction. And this process has begun in the last 6 to 9 months with a number of very large employers. Usually they are involved in interstate transport, and they are now transferring into the CompCare system. The significance of that, of course, is that the CompCare system is likely to be attractive to a larger number of employers, and therefore it will be that more people will be covered under that CompCare system. So whereas it's been a fairly modest jurisdiction, there is some likelihood that the CompCare jurisdiction will in fact grow. And given the fact that the legislation is out of step with most other jurisdictions, I think that's a cause for concern. I should add, I suppose as a footnote, that one of the reasons why larger employers might in fact be attracted into the CompCare system is, apart from the apparent reduction in paperwork and having to deal with the legislation in all of the jurisdictions around Australia, they would only be dealing with one jurisdiction, but the most attractive thing in my view would be that if the benefits and entitlements to workers in the CompCare system were less than those in the state jurisdictions, then that I think is probably a more attractive factor for some of these employers. And there are already indications from the minister responsible that in fact some of the benefits under the CompCare system will be reduced. The other point I started to talk about was the financial impact. The statistic that I had is that the rather alarming fact that about 2,000 people are killed at work each year. This is the latest information from the National Occupational Health data, and this is spread more or less evenly among states. I think that in Western Australia we average between 20 and 40 deaths per year, depending on the nature of what is happening in the workplace. But obviously this goes up and down depending on whether we have some catastrophic event or not. So that if you're trying to quantify what the change might mean in terms of what impact this might have on insurers, my argument would be this is probably insignificant. The reasons for saying that is that CompCare deaths, to put it rather crudely, or deaths which take place in the course of work with the Commonwealth, will be a fraction of that 2,000. And of those, of course, the numbers of people who are in same-sex relationships will be a further fraction. So there's no warrant, in my view, to say that this will have any significant financial impact. Really, the financial impact, although the particular lump sum to any given dependent is significant from an individual point of view, it's not really significant from an insurer's point of view, and I don't think that would be an argument upon which you could resist any change to legislation. So those are really the key points that I wanted to make, is that Commonwealth is out of step with a number of other states, and for some reason is particular in doing so, and is the only jurisdiction which specifies that the relationship must be with the opposite sex, that the financial impact of change would be minimal, and that there are good models for change in other parts of Australia.
Thank you. Just coming back to the Commonwealth definition of dependent, can I just put this situation to you? You have a lesbian couple, one of them is the birth mother of a child, and the other partner, who is a significant wage earner, is killed at work.
Yes.
Has the child any benefit at all under the Commonwealth?
That's an interesting point. I'd have to study closely the wording. Certainly a child...
It wouldn't appear so.
No, my initial reaction is probably not, because they're not the child of the deceased.
Oh.
They may be a child of that relationship or partnership, but they're not the child of the deceased, and that may present further difficulties and another inquiry, I would have thought. That's an intuitive response rather than stating...
Yeah, I think it might be right, though.
Yeah.
Thank you.
If no person can prove their entitlement to workers' compensation payment, does the payment go to the estate of the deceased worker, or is it totally lost?
No, it's totally lost. So if there is in fact no dependent, then there is no payment made by the insurer. And to give an illustration of this, where a child is killed in the course of the employment, quite often the parents are not dependent, and there is no payment to the parents, and as we know at common law, there is no payment for grief, and often these are unfortunate circumstances where the parent in fact has no recourse or remedy, save for there are specific provisions under the all legislation which provide for the payment of funeral expenses, so that the parents usually recover the costs of the funeral or a part thereof. Query whether in fact same-sex related partners would be entitled to claim the funeral benefits. In other words, it's probable that in fact there's a detriment here. There's a cost. If in fact a partner is killed in the course of the employment and they're not regarded as dependent, then it may be that spouse, partner, in fact has to pay the cost of the funeral, whereas in fact people in heterosexual relationships would not. So there could arguably be, and probably is the case in most jurisdictions, they wouldn't even have recourse. People in relationships of this nature wouldn't have recourse to the funeral costs.
Because the schemes wouldn't assume total dependency.
Because they wouldn't be regarded as dependents.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yes.
But they do assume total dependency of a spouse in circumstances where it's a person.
And in fact, it used to be the case that you would have to argue in this jurisdiction what the level of dependency was, and there would be arguments whether you're 50, 60, 70% dependent, but most jurisdictions now simply acknowledge that the death of the partner, they pay out the full lump sum. That's certainly the case in Western Australia. And with funeral expenses, there is more or less a statutory payment, which is made in Western Australia at the moment, about $7,000 or $8,000.
What test is used to determine financial dependency for a heterosexual de facto couple?
As I say, in most jurisdictions now we've tended to the view that where there is a death and there is proof of any form of dependency, that the dependent spouse would be entitled to the full amount. I'm not sure if that was your question. Your question is how, in fact, do they test the level of dependency?
I'm trying by
establishing a relationship.
I'm trying to compare whether that testing for de facto couples is similar for the testing for same-sex in the jurisdictions where
The traditional method, of course, is to look at whether or not the couples are in a marriage-like relationship or words to that effect. Of course, when you use that sort of language, marriage-like, then you get into circular problems of husband and wife, etc., and opposite sex. So it's, yes, but the traditional method is where the legislation has used phraseology such as domestic partner, de facto partner, that the courts have looked to establish those relationships under a number of indicia, such as whether the partners are in a sexual relationship, whether they have children, whether they've purchased large capital items such as a house together, whether they share their finances, etc., etc. So those are the accepted methods of looking at a relationship and consequently dependency.
Have Lord Campbell's Act claims survived tort reform in the state?
The independent, yes, a fatal accident kind of claim. Good question. I think they have, but I've got to admit to not being prepared for that question as I should have been, but I think we've actually tended to shy away from the either significantly disabled or impaired in terms of tort reform, and in fact the fatal accident claims, I'm sorry, but I have to, my guess is that we have also in Western Australia resisted cutting into those.
Because the example I put to you before would probably carry through into fatal accident claims. The child again would still be without remedy.
Yes, yeah, I would agree with that.
You note that Western Australia, Queensland, ACT, South Australia, and the Territory, Northern Territory, don't specify that in fact our relationship may be irrespective of gender.
Yes.
Do you have knowledge of incidents or cases where the legislation in these states has been interpreted to exclude same-sex couples?
Look, yes, that's a very interesting question. I did attempt some research at that yesterday by at least having a look at Austlii and see whether or not I could detect any cases of same-sex relationship which had been brought in these jurisdictions, and I couldn't. I reconcile that by thinking that in those states where it was clear that people couldn't claim, that people had probably been advised that there was no such claim. But I couldn't detect any challenges. As I say, I think from what I heard from the end of Commissioner Henderson's evidence that there had been incidental amendments to the legislation, and I think you'd have to go to each state and see whether or not they had likewise done that. So it may be that they've left in phrases such as de facto, domestic, but in another amending piece of legislation, the Interpretation Act, etc., that actually required that those words be interpreted to include same-sex relationships. So my apologies that the research is not as in-depth as it could be to get to the core of that issue, but on the face of it, there could be improvements to all of those states by making it absolutely clear.
Author of the CCH handbook, I thought you might have looked at that.
Yes, well, that's probably a good spot. That's the sort of thing I'd be saying to my students.
We might start. You talked about the financially insignificant impact of do you have any access to any financial modelling about the cost of workers' compensation payments which would support that assertion?
I don't. Again, I took that ballpark figure. I looked up the number of deaths which are occurring, and in Australia it's about 2,000 per annum. We would obviously be able to understand and know that the cost of those deaths, that information is available through national bodies, and the heads of workers' compensation can provide that kind of statistic. But my modelling, if you like, is simply to say that, of course, we know the proportion in the community who make up same-sex relationships, and on that basis, we could extrapolate.
Sure, I understand that logic. I just wanted to get to
that. But I haven't got to that point. There's probably some people at Curtin University with economics degrees that could manage that.
Yeah, you're quite right. Those figures ought to be available because death claims lend themselves to ready statistics.
Oh, yes. Yes, all jurisdictions obviously record those. It's a sort of being a little bit cynical, the rather alarming data which tends to be easy to locate.
Comcare would particularly have it. Commonwealth ones, because the only insurer.
That's right. Yeah, they're very easy to locate through Comcare. As I say, the number of deaths overall is 2,000. Comcare would have some fraction of that. My guess is it's between 50 and 100.
Yes.
I don't have any other workers' compensation questions, but I have a couple of other questions.
No, I haven't got any other questions.
Just that WISA dedicates its study to the effect of economic policies on women, and I just wondered whether You've talked about the different ethnic outcomes for lesbian couples, but I wondered whether you looked at it into other types of discrimination against same-sex couples, for instance things like motor accident compensation or compensation due to criminal injury or tort liability, those sorts of things.
I haven't personally, and my colleagues generally come from an economics background, and you may have been familiar with some work done by Professor Alison Preston, who's spent a lot of time looking at gender inequality in terms of wages. This is, in a sense, my first glance at this kind of issue, but it's certainly, I think, a good topic to look at. The data on motor vehicle accidents, certainly in WA, is less readily available. In fact, I'm not even sure what the source of that would be, but there would be fairly raw figures on the number of deaths, and again, you would be only extrapolating from those what might be the financial impact on the same-sex issue. Of course, the amount of damages awarded in each case would vary depending on the levels of dependency, lifespan, etc. Issues would arise there in the case of common law claims. In the case of criminal injuries, again, that's a very interesting topic for research. The locating of the data would have to be done through the Commissioner for Criminal Injuries here, but it's not something which I've attempted, but it's certainly worth looking at, yes.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's just the sort of data that we're interested in. I just wondered.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
In my researches, there were two articles which I did pick up from OSSI, which I thought may be of assistance to the inquiry. And one is by Natalie Hill, which is published in the Alternative Law Journal, entitled The Nature of Dependence and the Legal Recognition of Same-Sex Relationships. And also an article by Jenny Milbank from the Murdoch University Electronic Journal of Law, which is entitled Which Then Would Be the Husband and Which the Wife? Some introductory thoughts on contesting the family in court. I've just had a glance at those and noticed that they did discuss some of the issues of dependency, so I thought that I could just leave those with the inquiry.
Thank you, very grateful. Mm. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, Dr. Cutler, thank you very much.